It's that time again. American Riddle. Coming at you. It's your boy. Yeah. I think I'm going to let this play for a second. Got a special guest calling in today. My main man, Bryant.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend. The end of our elaborate plans. The end of everything that stands. The end, no safety.
What's up, people? Thanks for indulging me. Just kicking back, listening to the Doors, and like I said, I've got a good buddy of mine calling in. Yeah, I think I sound a little mellow right now, but my buddy's name is Bryant, and he's loves music. He's got a deep knowledge of music. And with the death of Ray Manzarek last week, I think it was, thought it'd be a good idea to showcase one of my favorite bands, The Doors. So I'm gonna wait a second, and my boy's gonna call. Just want to thank you guys for listening. I'm a little under the weather, but that's not gonna stop the show. My voice is a little raspy, a little congested, but we're going to get there. So just hang tight, and thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Thanks for making this thing go around. We're going to keep on going, whether I'm sick or not. So that's how it is. You know how I do it. And that's a promise. I like this song. Francis Ford Coppola's. Oh, there's my boy. Give me a second. Let's see what he's talking about. Yo.
How are you?
What's the word?
Word is the bird. What's going on? Are you knee deep in a podcast right now?
Knee deep, doing what I does, you know?
Cool deal.
You know how I do. Just playing a little music right now, closing out. With the end of Coppola's Apocalypse Now.
Masterpiece.
Pretty much.
Are you playing the beginning that has a certain band?
The Doors, baby
song?
Boy.
The Doors.
Yeah, I already prepped, the audience, so let's not tippy-toe around the subject.
Okay. You know no pussyfooting around?
No pussyfooting. What does that mean anyway, pussyfooting?
It denotes some pretty graphic visual images, I think.
A foot with a pussy?
I think Larry David talked about that one time.
Did he really?
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I don't want to step on his material.
That's right.
Well, fuck him and the horse he rode in on.
It's kind of like the show about everything, though, so I think it's all, you know, public knowledge.
Anyway, let's get back to the plan. So, yeah, I opened up with The End. And,
the End.
Little visuals of the master... director, filmmaker, writer extraordinaire, Francis Ford Coppola.
There's actually a documentary about that movie. It's called Hearts of Darkness. They talked about Marty Sheen and how he when he punches the mirror, it really happened. And he was really bleeding out, and he had a pretty serious heart attack on the set of that movie.
Is that right?
That's what I remember from that film. So
I never seen it. I think we talked about it. I think Brandon talked about it on one of the podcasts. And you said, you know, it's a phenomenal film. What's it called again?
Hearts of Darkness.
Hmm.
The the premise of the movie is that it's kind of modeled loosely on Heart of Darkness by Joseph Conrad.
Got you. Sorry about that.
But that's, that sounds like a story for another podcast.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting film, but you're breaking up a little bit. But we're on track now. My boy Bryant, just to give you guys a little back history. I mean, him and I used to run around drinking beers, drinking liquor, drinking anything that was put in front of us, and listening to Doors and everything else. You name it, we did it. And one time we used to run around. There's a tribute band that comes to town every blue moon called the Soft Parade. And we used to hit up the club, hit up the spots wherever they were playing. A lot of hole in the walls, though, as I recall.
That's right. They came to a lot of different places, the State Theater in Falls Church. I think the last time you and I saw them was at Jam and Java. And I think it was a short show for us, but, you know, it was still good.
Jam and Java. Yeah, that's right next to the wine shop, the Vienna Vintner, that I broadcast out of. It's a really cool venue to watch shows like that. But, yeah, the Soft Parade is probably one of the best tribute bands out there to the Doors. Lead singer Joe Russo.
Yeah. You know, I like how you say it's a tribute band because I would initially, before I ever saw them, I would think it was a cover band, you know, a band that just plays covers of other band songs. But they definitely are a tribute band because they have vintage instruments like the original Doors had, and they dress and look like the Doors, and it's a good tribute. And I think the surviving members all chimed in and said how great it was.
That's what I said. It was a tribute band.
Right. I was just backing that up.
The hell? You know, potato, potato. What do you want me to say? You know, awesome band. I just remember getting hammered every time. I don't know what it is. Like right now, I'm opening up a Dos Equis. And I'm going to pop this. Oh, I shouldn't be drinking. I'm on medication right now trying to heal. But I'm going to have this Dos Equis in honor of the fallen heroes like Ray Manzarek and Jimbo, a.k.a. the Lizard King, a.k.a. Jim Morrison. So,
this is a.k.a. Great. Black Clad Leather Demon.
So, yeah, we used to go around. Remember we used to do that shit? Go to like, I used to get hammered at those clubs. Like,
no.
Wasted.
No.
shit.
Maybe a little.
Jumping up and down and running around. I mean, the first time I saw the Soft Parade, it was amazing because I studied the Doors and listened to the Doors. And then when I went to see the Soft Parade, it was the Doors. It was like, look, I had to stop and think for a minute because I was like, this guy looks like Jim Morrison.
I think we left a couple of times saying that was the fucking Doors, man.
That's insane.
It's good times.
I remember we used to get there early and try to run. We were like groupies because we used to come to every one of their shows.
We started getting really familiar and like going up to them and accosting them, you know, backstage and stuff and being like, you know, I think didn't you drink one of his drinks one time and steal his tambourine and you run around and yeah, it was a good time. Good times were had.
Yeah, I've been known to take a lot of musical instruments from bands and jump up and. Once upon a time, I haven't done that in a while, but they're great. If you guys listening are ever look them up, I think they're on Soft Parade, thesoftparade.com. And I know they have Facebook and Twitter, and lead singer is Joe Russo. And look down. What's that noise in the background I'm hearing? What are you, like cutting wood? What the hell was that?
Well, we're cooking dinner, so I'm grabbing a drink and then heading back to a quiet area.
Yeah, that might be a good idea. It sounds like you guys are running a generator back there. What are you guys down? You guys are calling. He's calling in from down in the sticks somewhere in Richmond.
We're in Richmond, Short Pump.
Yeah, I've been trying to get Bryant to get back up here in the city in the mix of things, but you know that could be big trouble. You're talking about two dudes that used to drive around with beers in the front of the car and leave them in there in the winter so he'd stay nice and chilled when we got back out. So, but that was a long time ago, boys and girls.
Very long time.
American Riddle does not endorse drinking and driving of any kind or alcohol abuse. Just want you guys to know that.
Exactly.
So how do I sound, Brian? Does it sound all right? Just do a quick sound check because
you sound great.
Good, good. Yeah, just wanna make sure. This is my only my second call in, so I just want to make sure the audio is clear for all of our cool listeners. Right.
That's right. There's no delay, right?
No. Okay. You're not calling from Canada. You're close, but.
Oh man, yeah, I'm about as far away.
So yeah, back to the Doors. So yeah, my man Ray Manzarek passed away.
Sad news.
That was sad. When you sent me that text, I was just stopped in my tracks. I remember, I think I was at work, and I walked into like the back room, and I said, "Man, Ray Manzarek just died." And everyone said, "Who?" Man,
wow.
You know,
that's even sadder.
Generations, man. Generations start losing it, man. They start losing touch of their history.
He was a founding member of the Doors, and I mean, I was playing some songs. We took a little road trip today, about 2 hours, and I was playing some key tracks, and you know, Riders on the Storm and Break On Through, and just the keyboarding skills are just impeccable. It's amazing, and it's a sad loss for the music world.
Well, I mean, you know, they haven't really been producing music in a while, you know. But
actually, he'd been touring with you know, the Doors, quote unquote, without, you know, Jim Morrison, of course, and I think John Densmore. So it was really he and Robbie Krieger, but they had picked up a couple of different lead singers. And I think at one point in time, Ian Astbury from The Cult was singing for them. And then, you know, Scott Weiland from Stone Temple Pilots, or formerly Stone Temple Pilots, was singing with them. So, I mean, they, you know, a lot of present day musicians really admire them. Of course, they were impacted by the Doors.
They get so, respect.
Exactly. Respect.
But they're not, were they going around calling themselves the Doors?
Well, they were calling themselves the Doors of the 21st century. And I think John Densmore, who was formerly the percussionist, slapped him with a lawsuit and they had to drop that name.
Yeah, they should, man. Come on. You're not the, it's like when Guns N' Roses goes around saying they're Guns N' Roses. I mean, it works for some groups, but you're not Guns N' Roses. You know what I mean?
No, it's just Axl Rose and a bunch of other guys now.
Like it'd be like the surviving members of the Beatles running around saying, "You're not the Beatles. It's gone. It's over. You know, let it go." You know,
Paul McCartney calling himself the Beatles.
Yeah, you're not. Okay, it's done. It's over, Johnny.
So, exactly.
But yes, they did give us, you know, an amazing catalog,
and a really short period of time too. Which a lot of people forget because, you know, I mean, the thing, what I was thinking about today, when I knew that we were going to be doing this podcast, and what I was thinking about today, why Ray Manzarek's death is important is he's been around as long as I've been alive, you know, and now all of a sudden he's gone, and he was such a great contributor to this band and a great contributor to music in general. And, but what people forget is that they were only putting out records from 1967 to 1971. Which is 4 years. So, I mean, the longevity of their music is astounding when you think about how long they were actually producing music, which was not long in today's standards.
No, I mean, think about it though. That period of, I mean, most bands back in that, or even today, I don't even think we kind of look at time limits on bands today because they're here today and gone tomorrow. But the ones that were most influential in that time period, think about it. It was within a 4 to 5 or 6 year time period at best. You know, I mean, if you hit 6 years, you were doing something.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the Beatles. Think about the Beatles. How much have they impacted, you know, modern music? Probably everything. They were together from, you know, producing music from 1963 to 1969, which, you know, is no time. And you know, of course, you got the Rolling Stones. You know, they're doing their 50th anniversary tour, but I mean, you know, a lot of groups back then didn't last very long, and they didn't have a tremendous impact. But I mean, the Doors, you know, I can remember when I was a kid coming into my living room on Friday afternoons, and my dad would be sitting in this really ugly rust colored swivel chair drinking beers, and he'd have the LP.
Things haven't changed with him. Yeah. You there?
Yeah.
I think I'm losing.
Yeah,
you,
I mean,
right?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I lost you though after the rust-colored chair and all that.
Oh, okay. Well, he'd be drinking beers in this rust-colored chair, and he'd have the Doors debut LP on his lap, and it was such a tactile and you know, audio experience and visual experience, just looking at the LP and listening to the music. I mean, nowadays everybody just goes and downloads an MP3 or something, and that's their musical experience. And it's kind of sad because I really like the way that, you're buying all these LPs for Justin, your son. I think that's great because he's getting immersed in that experience.
It's tangible, to put your hands on something, pick it up, put it on the turntable, pick up the needle and put it on the vinyl. I mean, that right there is an experience that is just missing, you know?
Well, I've heard nowadays that they're developing MP3s that have the quote unquote warm sound where you can hear vinyl scratches in the MP3s, which is, it says a lot. I don't know why anybody would want it, but I mean, it just says a lot about the staying power of vinyl, because I can remember when I was a kid, 45s and LPs were kind of on the way out and cassettes were coming in, then followed by CDs, and everybody was scrambling to update their collections. But people were coming back to vinyl in a big way. And the reason is because, quite frankly, it just sounds better. I mean, when you have a digital file like an MP3, it's compacted, it sounds tinny. The vinyl rewards the listener with a much richer audio experience.
Yeah, it's definitely a more rich sound, and it's something that people that appreciate sound and quality. This is why vinyl's still alive, and this is why it's I think it's important to introduce it to the younger generation. Even if they don't listen to it. Like, I checked in with my son the other day, and I'm like, yo, I was like, have you listened to any of your vinyl lately? And he hadn't, you know what I mean? But I don't really take it personal, just because they have so many distractions going on in their life. But I know there's going to be a point at some point in time, you know what I mean? He's gonna gravitate towards that, you know?
Sure, sure. And he's getting to be in his formative years where he's almost a teenager, and that's really when my musical taste started kicking in, and they were, impacted by what my father listened to, what my cousins listened to, and, things like that. So he's at that stage where it's just going to take off pretty soon. Before long, he'll be
yeah, I
asking for Doors LPs.
I haven't even bought him the Doors yet. Not even close. I started to look around for some. Like I said, I got him the Beatles. I got him a lot of hip hop. Gotta give love, give a shout out to the hip hop community. But at the same time, you look at a group like the Doors. I think I have a clip also where Jim Morrison actually predicted, this whole techno era where it's one DJ or someone with a computer. Have you seen that one? Have you heard that?
I've heard of it, but I don't know if I've heard the whole thing. No,
it's a cool thing to listen to, because he's sitting there and he's talking about just about the evolution of music. Because if you listen to like a lot of Jim Morrison and the Doors, if you listen to their mainly Morrison though, because I think he was a little out there, and I think during a lot of the jam sessions he would get bored with the sound of that time. And he was always trying to either evolve and get into the blues or get into, poetry or get into something else other than what was being played on a radio. And
I don't ever think that Jim Morrison was really comfortable in his own skin for very long. I mean, he would find a role and get into it. And then he would once he got really popular in that, or he got critical accolades, he would move on to the next thing.
And to be so young, though, I mean, gosh.
Yeah. And when he was, he died when he was 27. And if you looked at pictures of him back then, I mean, his beard, he had gray, white streaks in his beard and his hair. He looked like he'd lived about 100 lifetimes in the short time that he'd really been in the Doors.
Well, give me a quick second, Brian. I'm gonna play a clip, and I'll describe it to the audience as well. I'm going to play that clip about Jim Morrison predicting the future.
I was talking about that this weekend, thinking a lot about it. I think the two basic types of music indigenous to this country are black music, blues, and the kind of folk music that was brought over from Europe. And I guess.
Brian, are you in another room or something?
No,
you got to stay out of that room, man. It's fucked up, man.
Okay.
Seriously, man. Just take the wine and put it in, because it just killed the audio. It sounds like a damn truck going on. Or just do the, if you guys are doing dishes or something like that, just stop, do it later.
Okay.
Just do it later. Okay. No, you don't have to be scared. I mean, this is a live podcast. Everybody knows I don't edit. I don't pull any punches or anything like that. Just do that shit later. That shit was so fucking loud. Tell your girl to just fucking put on the gloves and wash them by hand. I don't give a fuck what she does. Just turn that bitch off.
Grab another drinky. That was all.
Yeah. All right. Now I'm going to finish playing this for the audience one more time. Sorry about that, guys. You just sit there and drink your drink in that room.
Okay.
Black music, blues, and the kind of folk music that was brought over from Europe, and what I guess they call it country music, or the kind of West Virginia high and lonesome sound. That those are the two main streams of root American music. There might be others, I don't know. But it looks like, and like 10 years ago, what they called rock and roll was kind of a blending of those two forms. And I guess what's happening now is that rock is kind of dying out, and everyone is going back to the roots again. Some are going back into country, and some are going back into basic blues. I guess in 4 or 5 years, the new generation's music will be, it'll have a synthesis of those two elements and some third thing that'll be entire. Maybe it'll be, it might rely heavily on electronics, tapes. I can kind of envision maybe one person with a lot of machines, tapes, and electronic setups, singing or speaking and using machines.
So I just played a clip of Jim Morrison. You there, Bryant?
I'm here. Yeah.
My man. Relax, man. You sound all uptight. You don't sound like fucking. This ain't the Tonight Show. Good God. I got like, you know, maybe 50 strong followers, but they're 50 of the right ones, baby boy.
There you go.
But you can relax, man. It's all right.
I'm all good.
I don't mean to jump down your shit. But Morrison just went off describing the evolution. And you can Google this. It's called Jim Morrison, The Future of Music, on YouTube. And he goes off and, you know, last thing he basically says, you know, how rock is dying out and it's evolving, and gives a lot of credit to the urban community. But he goes in and finishes it by saying that he can envision one person with a computer being the lead guy of a band. And basically he's outlining a lot of people today. And this was done, I think this might have been done, I don't know if it says on here, in 1970 or 68 or 60, I think it's 69 somewhere, because he has the beard and all that stuff. But, I mean, who did he just outline? A computer. I mean, you know, I think of so many one-man bands, you know, like, I mean, it's your boy Trent Reznor, you know? You got people, just musical geniuses that are out there just dropping it with the aid of electronics.
Yeah, I think a lot of what, the music I listen to anyway, it's not necessarily a band per se, as it is one person who hires session musicians to go on tour with them, but the individual themselves go into the studio and write and record and produce all the music, all the sounds, all the lyrics, everything, and then, you know, take somebody out on tour with them to play it.
And they basically, you know, they, by doing that, I think it's, in a way, I think that's kind of smart, because, you know, they don't have the bullshit that they have to put up with the infighting and the egos, because they're interchangeable.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, Trent Reznor, actually, he's reassembled Nine Inch Nails. They're heading out on tour, I think, at the end of August or July, and then they're coming back to the U.S. And
we've seen them.
We've seen them a few times, and every time I've seen them, I want to say 4 times, and they've had different musicians almost every time.
I thought you were going to say every time you've seen them high.
Sorry. I've seen them what?
High.
No.
Drunk.
No, just a couple times.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a lot to be said about that, though, because his music comes out differently in different musicians, I think, when he writes and records and plays these songs on stage. And I think that's why he hires or fires or rehires different people to come in and join the fold and play with him, because they interpret his music in different ways that the audience can appreciate.
Yeah. And, you know, and we talked about that earlier, how different bands will, you know, go through infighting, whether it's Van Halen or whether it's, you know, the Beatles or anyone, and they're not replaceable. You can't go out and tour and call yourself. I mean, there's some that's done it. I think Queens of the Stone Age, doesn't he tour with a bunch of other, you know, musicians as well?
Yeah, Josh Homme is the leader of Queens of the Stone Age, and he's kind of got the same sensibilities as Trent Reznor as far as I'm going to record a record with these musicians, but I'm going to tour with these musicians. So, I mean, on his latest record, which I think is coming out in a couple weeks, maybe next week or the week after, Dave Grohl is playing drums, and Dave Grohl is not going to be drumming with him on tour. And he's got, you know, Trent Reznor. I think Elton John is on the record. I mean, it's just crazy the people who appear on it, but he's going to have a completely different band playing with him when they go on tour.
Yeah, my Dos Equis. I'm still drinking in honor of the fallen
Jimbo and Ray.
Yeah. It was featured. I think it was featured. Was this beer featured in The Doors, the movie? I think we talked about this.
It was. However, you know, what's funny about that, and that's always been a quotable scene for me. You know, when I go into a bar, I'll say, "Hey, bartender Dos Equis," you know, at 10 o'clock in the morning or 8 o'clock in the morning, whatever time it was that he was in the bar, supposedly. But Dos Equis was not an imported beer into the United States until 1973. Yeah, that's right. Until 1973, which is obviously after the time, you know, Jim Morrison passed. So that's the movie's kind of been, you know, Oliver Stone's movie, his interpretation of the events are a little different than maybe history would dictate.
I have posted up in many a bar and said, "Jim Morrison drinks Dos Equis. I drink Dos Equis." And that's the way it's going down. He never had him. That was a little creative freedom from the film. But you know what? In my mind, Jim Morrison drank Dos Equis, so I'm sticking with it, and that's what I'm drinking tonight.
There's a part of me that wants to accept Oliver Stone's version as gospel, just because I love the film so much. But I think all three of the surviving members of the Doors have come out and spoken out against it in one way or the other. Ray Manzarek, in particular, was really unfond of the film and the way it portrayed Jim Morrison.
Yeah, they've labeled it as one dimensional all the way around, and even Morrison's. But I mean, to Oliver Stone's credit and everyone that was involved with the film, it's show business. All right, this ain't show friends. All right, you get, at the end of the day, you got to turn a buck, and you got to keep people entertained while they're in those seats, and that's an entertaining film. It's starring Val Kilmer. that's my boy Val Kilmer. Val Kilmer as Jim Morrison, and he did a phenomenal job.
There were instances when Paul Rothchild, who was the original producer for The Doors, when they first Val Kilmer actually sent in to Oliver Stone an audition tape of him singing a song. And the reason why he got hired, because Oliver Stone actually, I just read about this a couple days ago, Oliver Stone wanted to pass on Val Kilmer, but Paul Rothchild, who had worked with Jim Morrison, had said that Val Kilmer singing Jim Morrison's lyrics as Jim Morrison stopped him in his tracks, and that's why the decision was made to hire Val Kilmer as Jim Morrison.
Ooh, I wonder who their second pick was. I wonder who is.
I'm thinking it probably wasn't Russell Crowe.
Nah, Russell Crowe, that motherfucker can't sing.
He cannot sing.
That motherfucker should be fired immediately.
Russell Crowe is horrible.
Yeah, but he's back. He's back as Jor-El.
Jor-El.
And he looks like he's trimmed down a little bit too. So all praises to Zack Snyder for that casting, because that looks phenomenal. But I'm talking about Jim Morrison, and I'm talking about my man Val Kilmer in The Doors, man. That movie, I'm telling you, I've watched that movie 100 times, and it never disappoints. I mean, it comes through every time. Of course, it only highlights, you know, certain aspects, and it doesn't really shine the light on the other band members that much. Some of them seem whiny, some of them seem scary. You know, Ray Manzarek, he's just kind of just there in some clothes, but you know, it's
played by Kyle MacLachlan, who is a David Lynch favorite.
Yeah, he's been in a couple pictures, but your boy, I mean, the music, it was so far ahead of its time. If it was released today, it would get nothing but Oscars, nothing but gold statues. I don't know what it was up against back in the day.
I think he did great. He did really well in that role. I mean, I was sold.
That motherfucker looked like Jim Morrison.
And sounded like him.
He looked like Jim Morrison.
Yeah, he did.
He couldn't pull that off today, though.
He couldn't pull it off today. He kind of looks like a sleeping bag full of garbage today.
He looks like Fred Morrison. What happened, man? He looked like Jim Morrison in the latter years, I think. You know what I mean?
Jim Morrison, and he lived to 53.
Good night. I mean, he took a serious dive. I mean, I was looking at his IMDb, and he was in shape up until I think he did a couple few films, and then
He didn't look that bad in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, right?
No, that's what I'm trying to. But he wore a trench coat in that, didn't he? Didn't he wear like the long Didn't he wear untucked shirt? Right when you start untucking your shirts,
a big sign of
When white boys like Latinos and the brothers, you know, we always keep our stuff untucked. We keep it hood, but like when the white boys start untucking their stuff, man, they got something coming out, and it's usually a gut.
A white issue. You got a gut issue there.
Yeah, they untuck their shirt.
Problem.
Untuck their shirt. They got something coming out. A gut or a boner. It's one of the two. I'm telling you.
Probably not a boner.
Hope not.
Yeah. And this is a former Batman we're talking about.
Oh, he was in Batman, wasn't he? He saved it, I think. He saved it.
He saved the Joel Schumacher version, I think.
But for what it was worth, you know what I mean? Val Kilmer, he kept it together until Clooney dropped it.
Well, I think Joel Schumacher dropped it. But yeah. George Clooney was in the last horrible Batman.
But you're talking about what? What year did that come out, that Batman?
Batman and Robin came out in 1997, but the one with Val Kilmer was out in 95, I believe.
Yeah, Batman Forever.
Who else? Was that Jim Carrey.
And Jim Carrey with the
cane. Tommy Lee Jones.
Two-Face.
And Drew Barrymore. And,
Don't leave the brother out, because, no, he wasn't in that, was he? Was Billy Dee Williams in that one? Or that was the first
one? No, he was in the first one. He was Harvey Dent in the first one. Two-Face.
I believe in Harvey Dent.
Yeah.
I also believe in Billy Dee Williams, a.k.a. Lando Calrissian. You know what I mean? He's the governor of
Star Wars Episode 7. He'll be back, I believe.
Talk about that stuff right now. But yeah, my man Val Kilmer.
It always comes back to Star Wars, doesn't it?
It always does. It always comes back. And I blame one man and one man alone. And that man's name is George Lucas.
Oh, God.
All right? But I'm not even gonna fall for that trap. You're trying to trick me.
It's a trap.
Oh, my voice. You're trying to trick me. You're trying to lure me into a trap to talk about George Lucas. But yeah, I want to stay on Val Kilmer for a second, because his resume is phenomenal. I mean, he dropped into Tombstone, where he played Doc Holliday.
Yes.
Right?
He did a great job. I actually am a big fan of the film Real Genius that he did before Top Gun.
That was like one of his first films, yeah.
That was, I think, after Top Secret, before Top Gun. But it's a great 80s film.
What's it about?
Well, it's about a guy who goes to college, and I think he's like 13 or 14, and he's the quintessential Real Genius, which is the film's namesake. And he partners up with Val Kilmer, and they get into crazy hijinks, and hilarity ensues.
Yeah, I see the poster. It's a lot of electricity was used on posters back then. You know, I mean, that was like the beginning of like Photoshop and all that stuff.
Yeah, you had that, and then Short Circuit, a lot of electricity used on Short Circuit.
there was another one with the model, and there was two guys with the model chick. I think Weird Science. I think there was electricity on that one too, wasn't it?
Yes, and they're remaking that, of course.
Wasn't that Kelly LeBrock? That was her name.
LeBrock's married to Steven Seagal.
Yeah, time hasn't been too kind to both of them.
Neither of them.
Yeah, they're
both of them, or neither of them.
Is that the right word? You're correcting me? Neither of them?
No,
both of them?
No. I'm not your son. I'm not correcting you.
He corrected me the other day. I'm gonna show him my pimp hand next time. You think you're better than me? That's what I'm going to tell him. You think you're better than me because you know things? You know what I mean?
You think you know things I don't know?
Yeah. And he was also in, Val Kilmer was in Willow.
He was with an Ewok, actually.
Yeah.
Warwick Davis.
And then he was in Heat. Oh, yes. Man. Remember that?
Chris Sherlis.
Heat. Now, Heat is a classic movie for you guys listening. Because a lot of people today, I always hear them, excuse my voice, man. Like I said, I've been under the weather and things ain't been working out, but we're going to work it out. That didn't make any sense. But Heat. I always hear shit about Heat where people always talk about, blah, 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 Ben Affleck, blah, 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 Ben Affleck, The Town. Let me tell you something about The Town. Good movie, but at the end of the day, it's paint by numbers, okay? Go see Michael Mann's The Heat, and that's where Ben Affleck got most, if not all, of his material. I mean, yeah, The Town was based off of this or that or whatever, but once you've seen Heat, there's nothing else.
And for all you listeners out there that like to play 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon, which is an old game, you know, Robert De Niro, Al Pacino are in that, so you can use that game, that movie for that game. Just yeah, saying.
It was like one of the few times where they, in history, I think that was the first time that they ever shared screen time together.
Well, they were in Godfather 2 together, but they didn't share screen time.
That's the so key you're right. word. That's
you're
the
right.
key word.
Screen time.
Sharing of screen time.
Spanning time.
That's right. So Heat, phenomenal movie. I mean, Val Kilmer was beast in that. He had Ashley Judd. I almost said Charlize, but you know what? Ashley Judd, and she was finer than wine in that one.
Oh, she back in 1995, man. You couldn't do any better than that. Oh,
top shelf, creme de la creme.
She, presidential margarita.
She she was a good girl in there too, because like she was pissed at him throughout the movie, but it's
oh she still took care of him though.
When he got pinched, she kept her mouth shut.
She did what she should do.
Yeah, she kept her mouth shut.
Never rat on your friends and always keep your mouth shut.
She kept her mouth shut.
Somebody once gave me that advice. Maybe that was in a movie, I don't know.
Yeah, and then Val Kilmer was also in Top Gun alongside of my man Tom Cruise.
Iceman. He was. Tom Cruise, your love affair, your ongoing love affair.
And, you know, I got stopped, I think it was day before yesterday. I was at work or something, and one of my coworkers overheard some conversation I was in. And all I heard him yell out was, Tom Cruise, Malcolm, Tom Cruise. I guess he's a listener, a loyal listener, and I appreciate it. My man Rob Schultz out there, and he pointed out that I said Tom Cruise in a sentence, so. Pretty funny if people are catching on that I'm a Tom Cruise fan, but
you know, words getting around the campfire quick.
It is what it is. You know what I mean? The man's got chops, and I mean acting chops. That is.
What are you gonna do?
Can't do anything. So back to Jim Morrison. Let's get back on track now.
Yeah, I think what I could tell the listeners two things. You know, if you really are interested in Doors, Ray Manzarek, Jim Morrison, Robbie Krieger, John Densmore, see the movie. Obviously by Oliver Stone, if you haven't already, but also see, and this only came out a few years ago, When You're Strange, that documentary that Johnny Depp narrates. Great.
It's an amazing movie.
Fantastic.
I remember I drove like 60 miles trying to find a copy of this, not knowing I probably could have just ordered it online next day.
Yeah, that's kind of what I did. Just ordered it off Amazon, but I
wanted it in my – it's one of those things where I just wanted it in my hand, and I called around to every Best Buy because I wanted Blu-ray. Everybody had DVD. I wanted a Blu-ray. I drove around and found one way out in Springfield, Virginia, and it's always a pain for those of you that live in the Beltway to get in and out of Springfield, Virginia. So
the mixing bowl.
Man, it's like going into the Sarlacc pit. So it is, you know what I mean, and getting out. I mean, no one –
you won't get out in 1,000 years.
Yeah, I'm like Boba Fett. I gotta climb out, hope for the best.
That's expanded universe talk.
Yeah.
Nobody knows that.
Nah, you'd be surprised who knows that.
I probably wouldn't be.
So yeah, the what are we talking about? Can't remember. Oh yeah. The
When You're Strange, yeah, great documentary movie. Now narrated by the great Johnny Depp.
Who made it?
You know, the name escapes me, but I'm sure it was someone who deserves a lot of credit.
Huh. And what is the movie? What's it about for the people?
It's basically the movie The Doors, but told through a documentary style. And I think it's I don't know. I don't want to say Oliver Stone's movie is biased, but it's more factual than Oliver Stone's vision of what the Doors were.
It's amazing because, like, the footage that they had, when you see it, and if you,
it's unseen.
When you
it's
get unseen. It, watch it in HD or Blu-ray.
Yes.
It's mind-blowing because it looks like it was filmed yesterday.
Yes. Amazing.
And the sound, I mean, it's amazing. And I, you know what I like, the fact is, this is how I know you're a music guy, is I always, like me, I'm my focus is on Jim Morrison. But what's cool about you is you every time I've said, let's get back to Jim Morrison, you specifically name each member of the band. And that's a great tribute, and it shows a lot of respect, and someone that respects the art and, you know, all the work that goes into making their albums is the fact that you recognize each one of their names. And I need to get better.
Well, you know, I mean, I think 9 times out of 10, when people mention the Doors, the first thing that's going to pop in your mind is Jim Morrison, for sure. For me, though, as I said, when I used to come into my father's living room and listen to music, you know, I would look at the album covers, and I would look at each member of the band and try to understand what their role was in the band. And it really brought it all home for me, because I'm just, I am musically inclined. I love music, but yeah, I think, you know, the Doors were, and Ray Manzarek, actually, I read a quote. He said that, you know, we were basically four guys who all got along with each other. And then once the third member left, or the fourth member left, and he's talking about Jim Morrison, you know, kind of fell apart. And I mean, they all had their egos and they all brought something to the table, but I mean, they couldn't function without all four members.
Yeah,
and I think they even made a couple albums without Jim Morrison. They didn't do well. I mean, I don't know anybody who has those albums.
Really, like, jazzy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, Ray Manzarek was the leading influence after Jim Morrison died. So.
Yeah, it's a tough thing. I mean, you know, they, like you said before, I mean, their impact. And would you say the career span was 4 years? I mean, 4 short years.
Well, they started, their first record came out in 1960. Their first album came out in 1967. Their last album came out in 1971. So that's 4 years.
Yeah.
That's, however, they put out six albums in those 4 years.
Six albums. But I mean, if you think, like, careers, like, I've been in a wine business for like 16, over 15 years, 16 plus years. And Jesus, man, it's like you look at what you do, what most people do on a everyday basis, and how does it impact? If I drop dead tomorrow, no one even know my name. You know, maybe a couple few people, but, you know, these guys, they go out and do something, and it's amazing how something like the arts impacts everyone's life on a day-to-day basis. I mean, not taking anything away from the school teacher, not taking anything away from the police officer, not taking anything away from the fireman or the parent or the stay-at-home mom. Those are, you know, really important positions of our culture. And but, you know, I want to be a rock star. I want to drink Dos Equis and
play, it's more
in stadiums.
I think it's more about being at the right place at the right time. You know, I mean,
yeah.
If a band like that came out nowadays, they'd have an awful lot of trouble getting a record contract or getting distributed or anything. Yeah, they were any band that came out in the 60s.
Yeah, they were in the beginning.
It was kind of a clean slate. And a lot of times, you know, a lot of bands that are alternative or whatever label you want to throw at them nowadays, a lot of their melodies come from the Beatles or the Rolling Stones or the Doors or Led Zeppelin or whoever. I mean, everything now is a copy of a copy of a copy.
It is. And where you say, like, today, in certain areas, though, I think it's, you know, when I think about that, I was thinking about that the other day. I think I was driving, I was listening to the Beastie Boys, and I think I was listening to LL Cool J, some vintage stuff. And I was thinking about the competition, you know, back in the 80s, where it was just, you know, you had a bunch of, like, really bad, or you had top shelf people who knew how to do it right and produce a rap record, like Rick Rubin and Russell Simmons, and they just knew how to do it. And then you had a lot of people that just fell to the wayside. But now you have a lot of groups that are coming out, and they know how to produce them, but the artists, they're not the quality of the ones back then. And sometimes it's not just within hip hop. I think it's within music at large. When you listen to the lyrics, yeah, we have the technology today to make the music and to make someone a studio MC or a studio singer. But they don't have the chops of some of these guys and girls.
Yeah, I'd love to hear a Doors album with all four members, obviously, produced by Rick Rubin.
Yeah.
How great would that be?
Wishful thinking. Unless he did a remix of it, you know?
Wishful sinful thinking.
Yeah. I don't even know where to go with that. But yeah, these guys, I mean, think about it, though. Morrison died when he was 27. So he's part of that whole 27 club that, I wouldn't want to be in this club.
He joined Janis Joplin and Jimi Hendrix and Kurt Cobain and
Amy Winehouse recent.
Well, she was 27 too, yeah.
She was 27, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a whole list of them. Those are probably the more famous ones, but what a club. I mean, they were here just for an instant. And yes, you know, we're left with their legacy, but it's in a lot of ways when you just listed off all these names, which you know today, not only were they early, you know, in the music scene, its development of rock and roll, we just didn't have the knowledge. Even with Amy Winehouse, we had the knowledge on drug abuse and alcohol abuse and mental illnesses and stuff like that. But
do you really believe that she deserves to be on that list in that club?
Yeah,
just because she's 27, I mean.
Well, she's the 27 club. It's famous people that died at 27, regardless. Now, as far as her talent, she's a remarkable singer. I mean, it's, you know, I don't follow her like I do Jim Morrison, but I've heard a dozen or so of her songs, and she could have been so much more. I mean, when I think about anyone whose life is cut short, I usually don't think about if they belong into a certain club or something like that. I think of, man, you know, if only they would have, you know, got it together or just, you know, taken a break. Or, you know, when I think of Robert Downey Jr., who's an actor, I mean, you look at the road that he was on. I mean, he should have been dead 11 times. You know?
I agree.
But, you know, he got a second chance. And oh, what a second chance that is, because he's come through, and he's come through in spades.
He has. He's incredible.
I gotta take a swig of beer, man. My throat is getting a little raspy.
Robert Downey Jr. was also in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Yeah, with Val Kilmer.
With Val Kilmer, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, he's awesome. I mean, you know, these guys are. Awesome films. And Ray Manzarek was a filmmaker, right?
Ray Manzarek met Jim Morrison at UCLA Film School.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and yeah, I think Ray Manzarek was actually a very good filmmaker. I was doing a little bit of research, and I think some of his professor was really disappointed that he didn't,
who was played by Oliver Stone in the Oliver Stone film.
What's that?
In the Oliver Stone film, Oliver Stone played Ray Manzarek's professor, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the talent that came out of that era, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Well, it'd be ridiculous to say that none of that came from drug use.
So do you think that the drugs, and I've heard this discussion before. Oh, the beer killing me. do you think that the drug use enhances the overall experience?
For artists, I do think that. I do believe that, and I think particularly in that era when people were experimenting with LSD and certainly marijuana, but more. LSD than anything. I think that really brought out a lot of artistic, you know, capabilities in a lot of the artists that were performing music at that time.
Huh. Kind of makes you want to do something to see how you are at your job.
I don't know. I think it would depend on what job you had. I mean, if I was a police officer, certainly.
Yeah. I'm inclined to smoke weed or smoke something or, you know, I mean, I kind of want to, but, you know, my main jobs, I've told the story in a podcast. I work so many jobs. I think two of them don't give a shit. I think one of them, we did drug testing. So many jobs, you know, what are you going to do? You know, I mean, but I can barely handle alcohol. I mean, I don't know what I would do if I, like, tripped on some mushrooms or did something. Would I create something better? I don't know. I'd probably be in a corner somewhere shaking. I couldn't imagine. I couldn't imagine, like, doing a podcast, you know, on a drug. Like, sometimes I'll do it on wine, and then I'll, like, I can barely handle that these days. It's like it gets in my stomach, and, God, I'm just, like, tired afterwards. I don't know.
It'll mess your mind up for sure.
I don't have a beer, but, man, could you imagine if I smoked up and did some mushrooms and tried to have a coherent conversation? Maybe I should try that one time and see what happens. I don't know.
I think you should do a podcast like that.
Really?
It happens.
Well, then I might get fired. I'll go ahead.
You're not employed, nor do you have employees, so I think you're all right.
I have a disclaimer saying this is just an act. It's not real mushrooms. This isn't real weed, you know?
It's spice. There's some talkies.
I'd be talking some shit. I could only imagine what that would be like. One of my podcasts that I listen to on a regular basis, co-host Joey Diaz, they get high all the time on their podcast. And of course, they're out in California, so I guess it's...
During the podcast?
Oh, during it. Yeah, he'll fire up joints. He has a vapor pen. He eats edibles, so he has the edible cookies and brownies.
There is a...
They have the lady that makes them and calls into the podcast and tells people how much, you know, where to go and where to buy them. Because, you know, it's legal, I guess. Or I don't know. It was or something.
Well, there's apparently a certain way to do all this because apparently you can't just throw the drugs into a cookie mix. You have to clarify butter and all this kind of crazy stuff I just learned recently.
Yeah,
so
you got to mix it up. You can't. I used to think.
Yeah, it's pretty complicated.
Yeah, I used to think you had to just eat a leaf or some shit. You know what I mean? Just put it in there and crunch it up.
Right.
Well, naive I am. But yeah, you gotta make it into some sort of paste. Not that I've done research on this.
No, me neither.
You know.
That would be illegal.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not illegal to research it.
Well, the government's always watching.
Fuck them.
I mean, look at Jim Morrison. He was sentenced to hard labor, and the government was definitely watching him.
Yeah, well, I like to think they have bigger fish to fry, but, you know, yeah, you're right. Sometimes they don't.
Idle hands are the devil's workshop.
I mean, it's a whole science behind making cookies and brownies. I'd be face down on my keyboard, though, if I did some stuff like that, man. I don't even know how you would focus. Do you imagine? Maybe I'll try it. Fuck it. You know?
You should put it in your take it to Long John Silver's and tell them to put it in the fish fry batter and, you know, have marijuana fish.
I don't want to do that. I'd be vomiting and shitting at the same time. I'd have a trash can in one hand, sitting on the toilet in the other, sitting there looking like a fool.
Yeah, I think we've all done that.
Yeah. Well, what are you gonna do? I'd be face down. Yeah. Yeah. No. I'm sure I've caught you face down plenty of times.
There have been a few times.
Bryant and you guys listening, Bryant and I go way back to college days at George Mason, Fairfax, Virginia, his college, because, of course, you guys know I dropped out. But I used to go there and hang out and chase tail and do all sorts of craziness. And I met Bryant when he was, I don't know what year you were in.
Well, I was actually in graduate school. It was 1999.
He's got all his degrees. He wants to. I was waiting for him to put that out there. Yeah.
1999. I met you. You were living next door to my girlfriend at the time.
Yeah. So, and we ended up hanging out and drinking. And there's been many a day that one of us has been face down, either in a driveway or a bar or
a Radiohead concert or.
Yeah. Can you imagine? I remember being at a Soft Parade concert and, like, I think I got into a fight with, like, a Chevy, maybe a Ford pickup truck, and
you don't remember it then.
Jumping on cars and running around, I was trying to recreate.
That's accurate.
Yeah, I think I was trying to recreate that scene from The Doors, where Jim Morrison was jumping up on the cars, and I think there's a scene where he's jumping on something, and God knows what was on my mind. I don't know. Sometimes when I listen to the music and I go to a show like that. I just want to embody anything and everything. So if there's smack around or if there was mushrooms around, God knows I probably would have done them. Maybe have 36 buttery nipples in one sitting.
That's right. That's right. There have been nights like that before.
God, I remember that. That was hell.
For sure.
I mean, a buttery nipple basically tastes like
a shot of melted butter.
Yeah, or Jell-O or something. Like, it tastes like butterscotch.
Yeah.
You know? And I remember, yeah. I was like, we were at some bar, some pub, and...
We're not going to mention the name because I don't want to give them any business, but yeah, it's close to the Fairfax area.
PJ Skidoo's. And, I remember now.
I wasn't going to go there, but yeah.
I was sitting up there posted, and Brian was like, man, some girl kept feeding you buttery nipples.
I think that was New Year's Eve. Was that Y2K or was that?
No, that was just a random Thursday, man. Mm. You kidding me?
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, but good times, listening to a lot of good music, eating a lot of good food, the good stuff in life. Like, you know, man, I really wish, just so you guys listening know, for some reason I thought Brian could chime in. This is what a novice I am at this podcasting stuff. I thought he could listen in because I had a bunch of clips prepared and different music to play. But he can't hear it, so I'm gonna have to get together with Brian, and we have to do another Doors podcast where he can sit in and we have the mixer and everything. But I think we've put shed some light on the Doors. One of my favorite bands. I mean, people always come to me and they're like, oh yeah, you're an Elvis or Beatles guy, and I always say the Doors. It's my favorite line.
That is a good line. I used to hear, are you a Beatles or Stones fan? And I subscribed to that for a long time, but now I feel like you're an idiot if you don't like both of them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if I had to choose, I mean, someone asked me recently, a friend of mine, she was like, yeah, would you, if you were on a desert island, what music would you take with you or something? I was like, well, music, or could I have a full catalog? And I was like, the Beatles, you know?
Good answer. I think I gave you all that stuff.
Yeah, I have every Beatles loaded up in my iTunes, thanks to you.
I hooked you up with
and the Doors.
Some serious stuff. Yeah, didn't I give you all the Pink Floyd stuff too?
Yeah, and Nine Inch Nails.
Nine Inch Nails.
We saw Roger Waters in concert.
Roger Waters performing The Wall front to back in 2010 on 10-10-10, actually. I just looked at that concert stub the other day, and I was like, wow, we saw him on the 10th day of the 10th month of the 10th year of the third millennium.
Yeah, don't get all gay on me. Why don't you tell the folks a little something about Roger Waters and that concert?
Well, I'm sure, hopefully most people know that Roger Waters was one of the founding members of Pink Floyd, and that Pink Floyd had a enormously successful string of albums that came out in the 1970s, the last being The Wall that came out in 1979, and that he performed The Wall in its entirety from front to back with a bunch of session musicians on tour, and it sounded spectacular. And I'm not sure if he's still touring with that or not, but
yeah, he is.
If he is, you should fly to wherever he is in the world and go see it, because it was amazing.
He was in the DC area not too long ago, and I thought about for a second getting tickets to it, because I was blown away. Never seen, I thought I'd seen it all. I've been to a lot of concerts with you, and that one blew me away. I mean, that.
Yeah, it's almost now to the point after seeing that where you and I have to be, I mean, I've just been seeing, the last few bands I've seen have been small clubs, because you can't top that.
No.
I mean, you and I have seen U2, we've seen Nine Inch Nails, we've seen, you know, TV on the radio, we've seen Radiohead, I don't know, we've seen Stone Temple Pilots, we've seen a lot of different bands.
Soft Parade
which ties into the podcast, obviously,
respect.
But I show respect, but that was the be-all end-all for concerts for me anyway. And there's a lot of other bands that I don't think I could think of another band that could even come close to being Pink Floyd or Roger Waters or The Doors. or, you know, having the same musical talent as Ray Manzarek.
Yeah, I mean, couldn't imagine actually seeing a show like that, like back in the day. That's just, I mean, it just would have been amazing, mind-blowing just to be in that era. Just to, like, if you could just make a time machine, that'd be a cool movie, man. Make a time machine and go back and hit every concert. Go to Woodstock. Go to, you know, everyone in that day. That would be an awesome film. You think? No? What do you got? What are you drinking over there?
I think sign me up. I mean, I want to be in the film.
Work with me, all right? Don't get all quiet on me.
I'm actually drinking a beer. I don't know if your listeners know about Lagunitas.
No, is it good?
It's great.
I mean, I don't know. I can't answer for the listeners, but I've never heard of it. What is it?
It's from Petaluma, California.
What'd you call it? Theatus.
Lagunitas. Yeah. It sounds Mexican, but it's not. But it's really good.
I got Dos Equis, the amber. That's what I like.
Good stuff.
Jim Morrison drank it, so I drank it.
Not really, but yeah. And it's, according to Oliver Stone, yes.
Hey, man, Oliver Stone says a lot. JFK.
JFK. Yeah. I think you and I have talked about that before. You know, when it's on, you can't stop watching
man,
it.
Man, I cannot. I don't care what part it is. I got to watch it. That's a
rule. I see it on TV, and it's like I gotta block out the next 4 hours of my day.
It's like if you're turning the channel and Tremors is on, you gotta watch it. You know what I mean? A lot of people don't know anything about Tremors.
I'm not feeling that, but
you
with JFK.
You don't like Tremors?
I've actually never seen Tremors.
Oh, man.
Isn't Kevin Bacon in that?
Of course. And so is the guy that played Remo Williams. Guess you don't know who Remo Williams is.
Ward.
Oh, my God. You've never seen Tremors. That's something, man. You need to watch that.
I just watched Remo Williams like not long ago.
Remo's the shit. Remo is jumping in sand.
That motherfucker was jumping off the Empire State Building or the Statue of Liberty with all the scaffolding and stuff back in 1986 when they were fixing it up.
That was back when they used to do real stunts.
Yeah, they didn't have CGI back then.
Nah, those monkeys were jumping and falling. Look,
they did, but
you thought Mr. Miyagi was bad by catching a
people
fly.
People got hurt.
You thought Mr. Miyagi was bad by catching a fly with a damn chopsticks? This dude, Remo Williams, could jump into sand.
He could walk over concrete.
That's insane. Remo Williams, let me look this dude up. Oh, my God. Who was the guy that played him? He's been in a bunch
Fred
of stuff.
Fred Ward.
Look at him, man. He's the all-American hero, Remo Williams.
I don't know why I didn't make 10 of these movies. I would have seen all of them.
He's got strong hands, strong thumbs. He's just one of those dudes that looks like he just used to just break rocks.
I think he was relegated to comedies after that. Like, you know, this guy was in Remo Williams, and now we're going to put him in a comedy.
He's in the right stuff.
My favorite thing about that movie, they used a British guy to play a Chinese guy or an Asian guy to teach Remo Williams.
You know what else he was in, Fred Ward? He was in Miami Blues.
Yes, where Alec Baldwin gets all his fingers chopped off.
That's when Alec Baldwin was young and thin. That dude,
thin like a fucking needle.
Yeah, that's now. If you haven't seen
that
the movie,
came up the other night. Alec Baldwin came up the night. We were talking about it, my girlfriend had mentioned Alec Baldwin. And I said something like, she was like, "Well, he's all fat," and I was like, "No. He got like a yoga trainer girlfriend.
Yeah.
Now he's thin. He's thin as hell. He looks good.
He's married, man. He's married and he's happy. And he actually my main man Adam Carolla was just talking about that. He was talking about Alec Baldwin and how Baldwin he was known or he was falling into that whole typecast as a pretty boy when he did the Hunt for Red October, and they said that a lot of people close to Baldwin has said that what he did was to reject Hollywood. He put on all that weight and just focused on the craft. So that they saying that's the reason why he did put on, but he never really got like, you know, Brando heavy.
He didn't get like Val Kilmer heavy.
No, he looked good. He looked good either way. But if you see Miami Blues, I mean, this dude is like a prisoner. He gets out and he's like trying to set up a deal, a score, and he's running around. I mean, it's an awesome movie, and it holds up well. It was made in 1990, and it's got Remo Williams in it. Your boy, Fred Ward. But if you want to see a Baldwin, vintage Baldwin movie, check out Miami Blues.
But, yeah, check out Threesome.
Who?
Threesome, vintage Baldwin movie.
I don't know it.
Which Baldwin are we talking about?
Alec.
Yeah. There's four, five of them.
Yeah, there's one from, there's one that's funny as hell. What's the one that was in Usual Suspects?
I think that was Steven.
Yeah, he got the cigarette plucked at him. It's one
of my by Redbone. Yeah, right. He was also in Pulp Fiction. He was Zed.
Yeah. He threw the cigarette at him.
What was the opening line of the movie? What do you want, you crazy motherfuckers or whatever?
Yeah. Hand me the keys. He's
like, hand me the keys. That was Benicio del Toro.
They lined them up. If you guys haven't, I'm sure everyone's seen The Usual Suspects. I mean,
I hope so. Classic. But if you haven't, you need to go watch it right now. Benicio del Toro, what do you say? Hand me the keys.
He's like, next. And he's like, hand me the keys, you cocksucker motherfucker. And then Stephen Baldwin goes, give me the keys, you cocksucker motherfucker!
That's great. You know, for all the listeners out there, Malcolm and I used to quote key lines from Scarface and scream them as loud as we could.
Yeah, Scarface is funny.
An empty house, you know.
Yeah. Those are good old days, man. Yeah, we'll have to do
in one.
You know what's funny about that? I'm glad you brought that up. Is I was thinking about that before I started the podcast. I was like, yeah, I really can't call it the Doors podcast because someone's going to think, you know, the Doors are going to, you know, Surviving Murders are going to be on a podcast. So it's like we're going to talk about. You know, I don't have the juice yet to have guests. So I find interesting people would have, and you know, certain knowledge base about music like yourself. Or we'll talk about, I'm starting to format it where we can talk about certain themes like The Doors. And then I know, you know, 10 times out of 10, we're going to end up talking about Remo Williams and The Usual Suspects. But the point is, stuff like Scarface would be a really interesting take on things because, A, when you have a movie like that, you can kind of break it down in so many different ways, especially when you look at the cast and see what they've done before, leading up to Scarface and after, and of course those really cool, memorable one line, or I guess more than one liners, but the lines that's delivered throughout there. I think I recently posted a picture on my Facebook of Omar Suarez, who was a character in there, and I just get tickled when I think about that movie. Just when you could just break it down frame by frame. So it's an awesome movie. Yeah, we'll definitely have to, look at Scarface and other. Maybe we'll do a gangster podcast. Maybe do Scarface with what was that Johnny Depp movie?
Blow.
I wasn't even thinking of Blow. I was thinking about what was the other one with Johnny Depp where he played the undercover cop, and there were a lot of
Donnie Brasco.
Yeah, Donnie Brasco. He's like a lot of parking meters down in Florida. Yeah. Yeah.
And you know what's funny about those movies is they always have an actor in said movie who has been in another gangster movie. I mean, Bruno Kirby was the gentleman of whom you spoke, who was in Donnie Brasco, who talked about the parking meters. And then he was also in Godfather 2, I think. He was
Clemenza.
Clemenza. He played young Clemenza.
Yeah, he was in Clemenza. And then he was also he was the coach that molested the boys, or tried to molest the boy in the Basketball Diaries with Leonardo DiCaprio.
God damn it. Was he in that?
Yeah, man. He was the coach. He tried to grab dude's junk, tried to make a move on.
I haven't seen that movie in 20 years,
one of the boys. I don't know. It was Leonardo DiCaprio and Mark Wahlberg.
Mark Wahlberg.
The Basketball Diaries. If you haven't seen that.
Yeah.
You motherfuckers got problems.
Great film. You know what I mean? Mark Wahlberg really struggled to get credibility. And
oh,
for me, once he was in Boogie Nights, I was like, I was sold. I was like, this motherfucker's an actor.
Yeah, I mean, Mark Wahlberg, he's come up. I mean, he's proved himself time and time again. Even some of his you know, his less successful movies aren't bad. Like, I just watched recently of his Contraband. It's entertaining. There was nothing to do. I was channel surfing. Wasn't that bad of a film. But the guy has chops. He delivers. Yeah, I don't know what he's going to do with Transformers, but, you know, I trust him. You know, I trust him. You know, what are you going to do?
So, I trust Mark Wahlberg. I just don't trust Michael Bay.
But you got, you know, all these bullshit, these movies people come around, you know, like, oh, yeah, it's this. Yeah, I mean, you gotta know the ABCs. So if you haven't seen The Basketball Diaries, get it. You know, if you haven't seen Blow with Johnny Depp, ah, man.
If you haven't seen Boogie Night.
Yeah, I mean, we could do a podcast just on Boogie Nights alone. Every one of those characters is just amazing. So that gives us something to look forward to. But I think you and I probably need to sit down and maybe I should come down, or next time you're up in Northern Virginia, we need to get together and do a podcast, you know, face to face. That way we can, you know, get the effects going and all that good stuff. I had a bunch of stuff queued up that I wanted to play, but it's kind of better anyway because my voice is getting ready to go and I'm sweating bullets here. I'm breaking out in a fever.
Technology is thwarting us.
Yeah, but yeah, thanks for joining me today, Bryant.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, my man. And let me just sign out real quick. I want to thank the listeners. This is a shorter podcast, but we're right at over an hour. It's cool. It doesn't always have to be 2 hours or 3 hours or whatever. But yeah, thank everyone for tuning in. A couple people just hit me up. My man Tyrone, Annie, Rob Schultz. They've been listening on a regular basis. Just want to acknowledge them. And even the names that I don't know, the people that's subscribing and following us, I really appreciate you guys sticking in there with all the best mess ups. Sometimes I have audio issues, but, you know, I'm learning. And we're going to grow this thing. We're going to make it happen. So, as always, thanks for hanging out. And you want to sign us out, Bryant?
Don't know, motherfucker.